committee meeting for Tuesday, October 3rd, 2017, 6 p.m. Got Alderman Frieders, Alderman Hernandez, and Alderman Cook president, and then Alderman Pletcher and Alderman Funkhauser are also here, and we got all staff. Okay, citizens' comments. What is that?
They're here for a presentation meeting.
If there's no comments, minutes for correction approval for September 5th, 2017. Question. Anything? Alex? Okay. All in favor, aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. New business. Item number one, EDC 2017-60, building permit reports for August 2017.
Okay. As of the close of business in August, this year we have 128 single-family home permits that have been taken. And that's ones that have been issued, not ones that are still sitting down. There's a few more down there. The big standout is the 73 multifamily, which we've pretty much had a zero for the last 5 or 6 years. This is the GC housing, the project went up by Jewel over there. That's the that and the Cedarhurst are the two big time investments for our building department right now.
Business 2, EDC 2017-61, building inspection reports for August 2017.
Right, it's pretty much standard for where we're at this time of year with all the residential permits going out, a lot of residential inspections. We've also, in August is when we started doing all the inspections for the underground and utilities at the two big commercial buildings going up in town right now. That was probably another 30 inspections on top of what's actually shown on the sheet, because all their plumbing, underground electric, and everything like that. I would go every single day and see their progress. They could backfill as they went. It's safer for people working on the job site, and that way it doesn't make them have to prop pipes up with rocks and stuff like that and hope it stays where it's supposed to be.
That wasn't there, but thanks.
But yeah, those were the big, really busy ones right now.
Any questions? Okay. Item number three, EDC 2017-62, property maintenance reports for August 2017.
In August, we only heard three hearings. All the cases were for weeds, and they were all abated by the time the hearing came up, so we recommended dismissal. There was a lot of complaints, but in the vast majority, we sent the letter out or contacted the owner, and the property was taken care of.
What's the update from the odor from Green Organics out there?
We dismissed that citation
Monday.
Yeah, Monday, yesterday. Okay. Due to pursuant to Kathy's decision interpretation that is as if on the day of the hearing, if the nuisance has been abated, we recommend dismissal. So I went out and toured the entire property, all four sides of the property. I didn't smell any odor at all. And
do you know what they did? Rectify it, or
I couldn't necessarily say they did anything in general to rectify it. I think it's one of those, it's a situational odor that happens, from my understanding, and that's what the county solid waste inspector, we had a revelation with that issue, is that the county actually has a solid waste inspector that no one
has. Soil inspector
that they really have. It's not on their website. I've spoken to the health department before, and no one ever seemed to point us in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So from now on, we will and be involving their solid waste inspector, because he is the one that's overseeing the property for the county.
Okay.
So we'll be involving him every time we get a complaint from that one.
Is that Marlon?
Yes.
Yeah.
Love that guy.
Marlon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
They seem more than happy to work with us on any issues we have. So from now on, the city and the county will be handling all those issues jointly. So
I'm guessing we won't have issues probably until spring, next spring, when our park opens.
Well, so what we did find out, though, when we met with the county, so Pete and I both met with Marlon, who is the soil conservationist with the county, and then the health department, Aaron Rixby, I think that's his name. When we met with him, he informed us that there are situations where the odor does become allow for better use of terms. When they are turning over the composting, or if the wind rolls, if the wind blows in a certain direction and it's going to towards the water park, that they can apply a type of deodorant to the windrows to reduce that smell or to mask that smell, but they wouldn't do it unless the county is out there recommending them to do it, and we didn't know that those capabilities were there. So being that we have this partnership now with the county, every time we get a complaint, we'll involve them. They'll let us know types of mitigation efforts that Green Organics can do to alleviate that smell.
From 47, when you're traveling north, before you would see these even windrows, and right when I had the first complaint, you would drive by, and it looked all disheveled, like they were either repositioning something. So I'd assumed it'd be 1 or 2 days, but I got a good half dozen calls over the month.
Well, in past years, it could be notorious for being really bad, so different times. And I know we have some controls too from the city side too, right?
We do the special or the annexation agreement authorization for that operation. I think expires in 2019.
Yes, January 2019.
So they'll be back in front of us at some point next year for consideration of an extension, so we can review it at that time whether we want to do so or not. But then also we have been going back and forth with their attorney, their operator, their subcontractor, and the property owner for the county side of the operation, just on whether their use of the property is permissible under the annexation agreement. So we did declare them that they were in breach because they had not come in front of us for a sublease. They've since backtracked on their description of what they've done out there, and they're trying to claim now that they're a subcontractor rather than a sub-leasee. So we'll see whether that is true or not, and if that even matters under the interpretation of the annexation agreement. So I would expect that to play out here over the next few months still, regardless of what they're doing with the nuisance.
Okay.
So we'll monitor it. Any complaints we have, we'll handle it with the county. It's a joint investigation, a joint operation on it. That way it's, you know, local municipality and the county at the same time. So if we have any issues, we'll have it double documented. And then if it needs to go to the IEPA from there, the county has a direct pipeline to their inspector that handles those type of things.
Okay. 2017-63 Economic Development Update.
Lynn's actually on vacation, so her written report is in the packet. If anybody has any questions about individual items, I can try to answer them. If not, we'll have to wait till she returns, I believe, next week.
We'll move on to EDC 2017-64, meeting schedule for 2018.
So the schedule is in your packet. As long as we keep it the same date and time, there are no conflicts with holidays this year. So as long as everybody's okay with that, we'll publish that in the next month or so.
Everyone okay probably with January 2nd one?
I'll just be groggy.
Okay. I was the only one that caught my attention. That's like
new year, new you, not refreshed.
Hell no.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I don't sleep on weekends. So New Year's is on a Sunday?
Mm. New Year's Eve.
Is it? Man. I didn't look that far ahead.
New Year's Day is
Monday. So yeah, New Year's Day is a Monday, and that's... I always take days off around that too, so...
I hate when holidays fall on weekends.
Yeah. Oh no, I love it. I
think it
double time twice.
Do we need a vote on that part, or is it
just a consent of the committee is okay.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Okay, item number 6, EDC 2017-65, extension of the bill program. I believe we're going to do discussion and then we'll vote the next EDC committee.
So for your discussion points. We've been going strong with the BILL program for 5 years now, And we have processed over 400 federal applications. Those are ones that have been issued. So we still, that number still may go up because we still do have some coming in. Traditional homes have, over that same time period of 5 years, have only been about 178, so third. We are interested in extending the build program for another year or for a maximum of 100 building permits, so whichever comes first. The reason why we're suggesting a cap is originally, if you remember, when we did the build program, we started off with a cap of 30, and halfway through the program, we hit 30, and so we extended it to 60, and then the third amendment to the build program ended up being just unlimited. So this is, I think, is an appropriate way to wind down the program. We see that single-family housing without the build program is outpacing the build. If you look at the chart at the bottom, that bar graph is going in a different direction. So we think this is a way for the builders to begin to market to individuals that the program is winding down, fill in the last few lots within subdivisions. Subdivisions have been building out, and then to eventually end the program. We haven't, at the staff level, decided if we're going to do 50 the next year. We haven't decided where we're going after this period, if it's just going to end here, or if we're going to go and wind it down a little bit more. But we're just asking for the extension to December 21st. I'm sorry, it should be 31st, not 21st in the memo. December 31st, 2018, or a maximum of 100 permits, whichever comes first. So if you have any questions.
Then in this process, this next year, then you'll be winding it down, and are you going to let the builders know that they need to, that gives you an opportunity to have some communication with them to let them know that it's going to go.
We are in constant contact with our builders. As the year goes, they begin to ask us, what's the likelihood of this project, the program getting extended? And we have begun to let them know that a staff's recommendation is to begin to wind the program down in an orderly way. So it's just not. Yeah. And then we get flooded with a whole bunch of permits.
That's what will happen. Probably if you do it that way. Mm-hmm.
So we extended this back in
a couple times.
Yeah, this is the seventh extension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and since the we talked about the Build 2 program, and I'm still of the mind that if we don't figure out the funding source that doesn't, like the whole robbing Peter to pay Paul thing, we've talked about that extensively. While I'm all in favor of more people to move in Yorkville, looking through these kind of survey results, in my unprofessional yet adorable opinion, I think if people are moving to the Yorkville area, they're moving to the Yorkville area. And while $10,000 at closing to me does sound great, if I were a homeowner, the fact that one of our aldermen who might be absent this evening immediately flipped it into a swimming pool is kind of like a...
Or
an awesome deck and a big old pool. I think the program served its purpose. I think we got a great pop out of it. We got some developers kind of off the ground. I should have changed that up to match with a pun. I apologize. But we did a lot of good work. It's great to outreach our neighbors. But at the same time, I think it shows more responsibility to say, okay, we've already extended it 7 times. Let's celebrate its victory and say, okay, we're going to be, the sun has set as of December 2017, as we had said in our last extension. In my opinion, I think we owe the residents who already live here a better allocation of where that $5,000 is going. I'm kind of in favor of letting it fizzle out in December.
This coming December.
Correct.
Alex?
A lot of mixed feelings coming in here, having been moved into Yorkville with the build program. But having now been a part of the council and hearing other feedback and opinion and getting more information, I'm the same mindset as Joel. It's like, yeah, it's great to have more people here, but at the same time, the funding source is where it's a whole different perspective when you're the one moving in, and then you come onto the to city government, and then you see behind the scenes and you see what it takes and what it took to get there. But I agree, he said it perfectly. I mean, just wind it down and celebrate, and you know. And to be honest with you, that was something that, you know, I wasn't expecting to say, because I discussed it with my wife, and I'm like, you know, she really loves being here in Yorkville, and the Bill program helped us get here to Yorkville, and she's like, wow, man, that's so hard. Why, you know, why should we deny that to anybody else?
All right, because you won't get flack from that.
right, exactly. And it's not that we're going to get flack. I don't care about flack. I just, you know, at the same time, I'm here now. So I'm here now, part of the community now. What do we do for the people that are here now? What's the right thing to do? And I'm hearing compelling reasons to just let it drop now.
Well, the thing that kind of hit it for me, besides the fact that we've been talking about the money, do you agree you would have not moved to Yorkville this year if not for the program? In 12, strongly agree, 43%. 13, 15. So in that number has gone between 15 and 30 since the inception, except for that first year, because we were the only ones kind of doing it. So, I mean, you started a trend. Other people have kind of followed suit. If people are going to move to Yorkville, it's because either we're making good decisions or the area is attractive to them or we fit their life. I think the $10,000 incentive, like I had a conversation, well, can you use it for a down payment? No. Can you use it against your mortgage? Well, sure, once you have it in your hand, you can do what you want with it. And then I was telling Alex, I'm like, if somebody gave me $50,000 up front for a down payment, that would make a lot more impact than $10,000 after the fact, because I'd probably spend that $10,000 on furniture, which is nothing wrong with that. But there's no furniture stores in Yorkville that would be receiving that. So I'm of the mind that, yeah, we got to keep the money in-house, pay for the things that we've already invested in, and kind of be thankful that you guys came up with this and had such a big bang, but we need to kind of respect the people that are here. Instead of enticing more people to join in on paying more strangers to move here, I think we got to let it fizzle.
To add to that, I think, too, that what you guys are doing with the downtown, trying to get things rejuvenated, I think that's great. You know, we got people in. Let's make Yorkville, like you guys said, give it a personality, you know, so that the people that are here can tell people, hey, I live in Yorkville. It's the same way that people live in Naperville say the same thing. Hey, I live in Naperville. And people want to come here. People want to visit. Want to come to the events downtown. Want to, you know, eventually move in or whatever.
Okay, well, I understand the things. I'm probably could go the other way because I have three subdivisions that were completely depressed and stalled out. Briarwood, Wendat Ridge was a horrible mess. And, 1990s was... what's the one there next to Raintree tucked in there?
Crestwood.
No. Country Hills.
Country Hills. Yeah. That was stalled in the 90s, and it's finally starting to go. So I learned when I went door to door with neighbors, too, there, that when you explained to them the people paying taxes, it does, in 3 years, the incentive has got back. But I think it's time that it gets wound down. I didn't know if you wanted to go cold turkey with the developers.
Well, every time that we've extended it is proof that we haven't gone cold turkey. I think this
right.
is okay.
We've
kicked it down the road. And I also think that this is a good opportunity to have another conversation with developers. What would work that isn't us shelling out $5,000 for every new rooftop? Maybe there's something different that we can do. I'm all for inventive ways of attracting people to business and to building houses. I just think we need to rein it in. And then instead of spending $5,000 per house, maybe there's something else we can do. And that's why I think let's put it back on the discussion table, not make it $5,000 a house, and figure out a better way to do the same thing but with a different mechanism.
So the comments about letting it fizzle out are that you don't even want to do the 100 permits for next year.
Correct.
You're talking about cold turkey. Okay. All right.
Just out of curiosity, Joe. I think I know where you're
saying,
but
we probably all know where I sit in this room.
I'm
agreeing with Joel and Alex. You know, it was a great program. It, you know, it did what its purpose was, and now I think it's time to, you know, I had the exact opposite reaction, Kendon, when I went door to door. Everybody was ticked and mad. So we're different parts, so I don't.
When you show them that the additional tax revenue you're bringing in every year, because these people go on to tax revenues right off the bat. So you add that number of people, you explain to them this is how much more money, this is how much more people paying into schools, union jobs, all that stuff. They were like, yeah, that was the one good thing. They were still picked about their water bill and their taxes, but, you know, that was the only thing that I... And it didn't hurt. I mean, I didn't really have too much flack on that part. It was more water bill and amount of taxes they paid, school right. district, and all that stuff, so...
We don't have any new houses going up in my neighborhood, so everybody's angry
right.
about everything.
Well, I was that way, too, when I came in.
That's it. I mean, I think we, on the horizon, got some big projects coming that we're going to need the money.
Yes.
Chris?
I think it's short-sighted on our part to end this in 2 months. I think staff's recommendation to continue for a year on a limited permit basis is reasonable, and then the following year, wind it down completely. Maybe it's 50 or 30 permits. But I think from the side of the developers or builders to have a couple months to end their marketing and have nothing from us in support, I think it's very short-sighted. As Ken mentioned, every house... After your fourth year, it is 100% at its tax rate, which is generally about 10%. Average home, that's about $5,000 to $6,000 of tax base that comes in. So year four, you've paid for the program. Year five, it goes back onto the tax rolls. Plus, you have to figure we have had sales tax increases year over year. More houses, more people spending money. So you have a greater tax base. You have more sales tax base. Also keep in mind, these are infill lots. We're not adding more roads. The longer we can continue to fill the current developments, it's not creating additional impact to us because these are already stalled developments. If we were doing this for greenfield, we'd be incurring more costs because we would be actually building new roads, building new utilities. We're not doing that. The longer we can keep this moving with the pace of these infill developments, the better we're going to be. Our biggest problem we have right now is we're trying to fund $2 million of roads. We're only putting $600,000 to $800,000 to road maintenance. That's because we have all these undeveloped subdivisions. Mm-hmm. We've got 220 road miles that we're not maintaining properly. We can continue to keep these permit numbers going. I think we're on the right track. And we do need to end the program. But I think we need to not go cold turkey. I think that could hurt our builders. It's going to... hurt our numbers overall, I believe, but I think we should work a plan to phase it out. And whether 100 is not the right number for next year, I don't think it should be zero.
Well, but the idea is every time we extend it, we put an ending date on it. I mean, we're not surprising it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this is going to go from here to here. And then if we get to here and we approve it, it's going to go from here to here. I don't see it as being short-sighted. I see it as going, okay, we've made a difference. We've impacted our numbers. We've increased our population. We've garnered more rooftops. But like you said, we have to spend money now, not in 4 to 5 years. So like, while I'm happy to allow that to catch up, I just don't think we're in a position where we can kind of throw it all out there.
I don't think we're throwing it all out there. Right? We are seeing increases in our revenues. And that's really what the key is. We need to increase our revenues without increasing our expenditures.
I mean, look.
It balances after 4 years, then it starts to become a revenue. And this cycle, we've done it. I think, yes, this needs to taper off as compared to just going cold turkey. And, you know, if we were having this discussion in July, it'd be different for me. I'd feel different about it if we were doing this in June or July, mm-hmm. saying we're going to end it in December. We're in October.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're right at the end. I think we would be better situated if we would have done this discussion 3, 4, 5 months ago. I maybe have a different opinion. I think maybe we change the number from 100. You know, instead of having it as 100, maybe we bring it down to 75, and next year it's 30. Or the year following is 30. Taper it out that way.
There were only 106 build permits last year, which is the most we've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
So even at 100, you're looking at basically a full year's worth of growth.
Okay.
And while we're increasing our permits... Yeah, I think 75 or even less would still have the same impact. You get the people who really want it to act on it at the beginning of the year when buyers are typically stronger, and then you give everybody else a couple months to kind of pick up the remaining few before they wind down the season.
Right. Staff's recommendation for 100 was based off of comprehensive plans where it stated that 101 permits on average per year would get our inventory down within 8 years. So that's why we went with the 100 permits.
So that's something I was flexible. Even if you're going to phase it out,
mm-hmm.
you can make that cap number different.
How about 50 in July?
Pardon?
50 in July. It's done in July.
It seemed like
that's the high
I think that we kind of had this issue with the builders 2 years ago where we had extended it 6 months.
Yeah.
And that really put them in a tizzy because of the middle of the construction season. I'd rather say, you know, maybe just 50. 50 through the year.
And whatever it hits, it hits.
It hits.
First come, first.
Instead of putting it in the middle of the year. Maybe they'll market it harder and try to push it a little harder.
Right.
Because that's part of my difficulty with wanting to extend it at all is the fact that they only come at the last minute. Like,
right.
Developers only showed up last year at the city council meeting and said, hey, you got to continue this. Okay. Well, the topics that we discuss on the agenda are all public information. I almost feel like it's like, we agreed to do this and extend it. We've extended it 7 times?
Yes.
Okay, we've extended it 7 times, and now that it might be coming to an end in 2 months, there's still nobody here. The only time they will show up is when it's about to be yanked.
They'll show up in the meeting you vote on at council.
Right, and then they do tell us, the staff members, at every occasion, you know, this is a good program, we want to keep it. Our biggest user has been Pulte.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, Pulte has moved from their Autumn Creek subdivision to Grand Reserve. And they have the one unit under lock.
Mm-hmm.
They're potentially going to move into another unit. But they're the biggest users of the build program. We have D.R. Horton, who has not used the program beginning to do. I think they submitted like 2 permits, and they're getting their feet wet. They've contacted me to get an understanding of what the program is about. They also are moving more to different units in Grand Reserve, be looking to use the program.
I think the biggest area you're going to see an impact is if it did go away, and whatever, I don't have an opinion either way, would be the smaller subdivisions like Briarwood and Country Hills, where you've seen the tremendous amount of infill. There's a price discrepancy between the bigger builders and the semi-custom builders, where from what they're telling me is that allows them to market a, you know, for lack of a better word, existing subdivision a little bit older. You know, they can, no clubhouse, nothing like that. You know, generally they seem to be marketing to the people that there's a lot of build programs in there. Although by volume it's not more in those areas, but if you looked at it, if you isolated it by Country Hills alone, or Briarwood alone, or some other small services, they do a lot of builds in there. I think Briarwood, I think they've almost all been built, haven't they? Briarwood?
Yeah, they're almost built. I think they're like 2 lots that aren't built, but I think 2 or 3, but they're
Briarwood?
Owned by adjacent.
There may be more than 2, there may be like 4.
But a couple of them are owned by the adjacent property owners.
Okay.
So they're not.
So I think of, since the program has begun, I think everyone in there, with the exception of a few have built programs.
Probably where you'll see, I'm going to guess if I had to predict what will happen, like Gwinnett, because they're getting close to being, they're on the final stretch. You're going to see them come in, probably buy up a bunch of them right before the thing.
Well, they actually have to have owners, they have to have buyers.
They have to have a contract.
Have the spec, right?
But that was talked about last time, that you're going to see a rush of that, and then people.
Yeah, I think you'll see a marketing rush in the builder's prep. The big thing is this, is that what we're seeing and I'm seeing in the field is our semi-custom builders are borderline getting squeezed out right now. Grand Reserve's going, and that's from what the Q builders and a couple of people have told me, is that the big money can go there. They can buy 60 lots at a time or however it is, and then they can afford to sit on them for a while. Where our small builders have Country Hills, Briarwood, a couple of places, a couple in Heartland. You know, you're going to see those. Those will be probably the ones that the build program will first be pushed into.
Well, if we want to be flexible with this, why don't we do 50, but then make our share 2,500 and ask the builders to put in 7,500? If they're getting this much advertising out of it, we kind of need the funds here. So switch the dollar amount, chop it in half, or even more, go 30, make it 7,525, and then see what happens. Because, like, I'm still from the standpoint is we're borrowing from the people who live here to entice more people to move here, so we can also borrow from them to entice more people to move here, and it keeps going. And sure, fourth or fifth year it might end up working, but how many kids have we added to the school district?
Mm-hmm.
These are numbers, and I'm like, okay, if this is a 55 and older community, that's awesome. I don't see it that way. I'm
I got three of my own little money suckers. So it's like I'm looking at it from a standpoint of I don't want to keep kicking this particular can down the road. I like helping developers. I like the idea of making things attractive to move here. But under no circumstances am I comfortable with an eighth extension that puts us on the same hook that we were before. So yeah, like...
That's why I wanted a discussion here.
Yeah, it's like, we change the dollar amount, let them give out $7,500, we'll do $2,500, and then we can wean our way off.
I wouldn't be comfortable with that personally without a discussion with developers in the room.
But can they have that discussion in 2 months?
We could. I would just recommend that if we do that, that we change the name of the program, because the name of the program has a...
Right.
Special connotation that people are expecting, and the resident wouldn't see the difference, but the building would.
Right.
So, I don't know how that would affect.
They would go screaming.
But how would it would affect their price?
We'll give them 25 and they can do their $5,000. Still 75 in your back pocket. Still buys you a heck of a nice pool.
Yeah.
The deck.
So we're going to struck staff do. Because if they need to, if you need them to go and see if builders are willing to do that, they need to do that sooner than later.
I think 100 is too much. I mean, if you're trying to excite the developing population into building as many homes as possible, as fast as possible, granted, you will make sure that these homes are built adequately. I like the idea of it ending in July, but I understand it's their happy season. And we don't have winter anymore, so technically they could be building in February. Yeah, I'm in favor of cutting it by even more than 50. I mean,
I'd say if we do the first year 65 at the 10,000, you know, 5 and 5, and then go 30.
No.
Following you.
That's too long. We've already done 7 extensions. I mean, like, we can't. Like, I don't want
to. Well, just run it in 65 and then.
We give the votes to defeat it.
Absolutely.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. But understand.
So I say let it go, and we'll vote it down.
I see, like, and that's, you know, the difficult right. part of being a logical human being. My opinions do change with new information. I'm not afraid to say, no, my opinion has changed. That's why I went from, yay, build program, to wait a minute, what are we doing here? So I understand. I think both numbers need to be chopped. I mean, you need to chop the number of applicable homes down by at least half, and then I seriously don't want spending out any more than $2,500 per house.
And Christy's right that it has to be a different program because it has the connotation of what it is, and that's going to be a hard sell to redo that. But I think for simplicity, you keep it at the 5 and you figure out what number, how many apartments it is. But that's my opinion. And if it comes out to council, that would be...
And you don't have to have an expiration date. You could just have 30 permits, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And then it's done. So it doesn't have to have an expiration date.
One last chance.
What do you think about that? 30 and done. Or 25 and done.
You mean into the next year?
Mm-hmm.
After, so then, you're finished with
25 or 5?
With do the full 5.
Do the full 5 and 30.
30 and done. That'll be
30 and done.
Yep.
We understand the impetus, we understand the importance, we understand the drive. We're looking after the...
It's sort of like saying ourselves about over, so...
Yeah. You should move to Yorkville if you want $10,000 to build a pool right when you get here. Pull it close enough. I am okay with 30.
I'm okay with it.
Also expiring December 31st, 2018.
Do you want this to come back to committee next month when Carlo's here?
Yeah, and that way I can convey it to the other two aldermen too that are on here just so they know that.
Okay.
What the thought process would be. That's why I said that I don't think we should have voted tonight. It would be.
Sure. The alternative is we could take it to city council if the recommendation is to do 30, period. I mean, that's a relatively easy ordinance fix. I just have to refer to take it to the October 24th meeting. That way you've got more time to notify the builders if you don't want to bring it back to a committee.
What do you think?
I'm okay with council. Because, like, if I was chopping it off at the leg, like, and I'm not saying that I'm doing anything, but I'm saying if I was adamant about chopping it off at the legs, I'd want
you'd want the decision to be made. So either way, I think it makes more sense to go to council since we have rattled it off. And Carla will be sure to comment.
I mean,
we have to worry about it.
I think Carla is probably going to be opposed to it no matter.
Absolutely.
It would be zero. That's only he'll be. So I knew that
right.
up front. So.
So 30 and...
30...
$30 and $5,000.
Right, yeah. And but the continuing the same name then.
Yes.
Yeah, so basically it's at 30, starting the first of the year, and boom, it's done after that. Completely. So, Scott knows how to
discuss
that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Item number 7, PZC 2017-12, 104 North Bridge Street, rezoning and variance.
So this came before us not too long ago. Staff worked with the petitioner, who's Mark Southern, on this application. Mark is the contract purchaser of this lot. The lot itself is about a little over an acre. It's zoned R1 and R2. It straddles both lots, the existing home. The request is to have the property rezoned for B2 retail commercial business, and they are also seeking a variance for the proposed use, which would be a restaurant and banquet facility. Because of the topography of the site, there's a request for a variance so that the building can be shifted more to the east, which would reduce the rear yard setback from the required minimum of 20 feet to 0 feet. The parcel itself, the two parcels themselves, would be consolidated, and there would be a two-story building on it with surface parking. The surface parking right now for the building, which would be about 12,000 square feet, would contain about 38 parking stalls. And the first floor, the main floor, would be for the restaurant. The top floor would be for the restaurant, and the lower level would be for the banquet facility. The petitioner has spoken with staff in regards to a public-private partnership for additional parking to the site. The intervening land use between this parcel, which is adjacent to 47, and residential homes to the east is Ron Clark Park. So we'll go into a little bit more about that public-private partnership to extend parking to make this site feasible for restaurant land use. The comprehensive plan does envision this particular area as traditional neighborhood, residential, and parks open space. And staff struggled with that a little bit, but as we went through the comprehensive plan a little bit deeper, there are sections that call out particular zones. And in this particular area, it would be Zone F. And then within that zone, it does recognize that there are locations adjacent that are adjacent to major arterial roadways, that there could be some small-scale office or some retail or institutional uses within this area scattered throughout. So staff is more comfortable having delved in a little bit more on the comprehensive plan idea of this area and this little node. But in order to compensate for the comprehensive plan is seen in this area, we would recommend that the petitioner maintain that neighborhood scale with their design and incorporate some high-quality development designs, kind of with a nod to what the surrounding area already has, that character. This project would have to go before the Planning and Zoning Commission, which has been rescheduled to October 18th, and that would be for the rezoning and the variance. And then it would come back to City Council at a later date for final consideration. So the petitioner is here with their engineer. If you have any questions for him.
Hello, everybody. Mark Southern, and I have with me Stephanie Sales, who is the operations manager for Fisherman's Inn. So I own the Fisherman's Inn in Elburn, and I also own an environmental company called NCAP. We've done quite a bit of work in the area. We do work with natural areas, water resource management type projects, stormwater projects. We're a consultant and a contractor. And if you're not familiar with Fisherman's Inn, I bought Fisherman's Inn in 2012. I've been closed for 4 or 5 years. We did a complete ground-up restoration on the building, sunk a lot of money into it, and turned it into a banquet facility, primarily weddings. And we're happy to say we sold our 96th wedding, I think, for next year. So we do one wedding a day, That, if you do the math, is most Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays from April through November. So we're busy over there. It's going great. We also do a Thursday night patio bar that's open from mid-May through, our last one is actually this Thursday, so beginning of October. It's primarily outdoor. We have 20 acres of grounds, beautiful ponds. We've done a lot of landscaping, a lot of stonework out there, changed the look of the grounds, and it's been a hit. And so we're feeding probably 200 to 250 every Thursday night, reservations only, and it's gone really well. So I never thought I'd be in the restaurant business, but you know, we've enjoyed the patio bar. I've always wanted a bar. Started out as a hobby, and then it turned into 250. You know, our worst night was before we started taking reservations. We had 300 people show up all at once. They ate all our food, then they ate the Blackberry's food across the street. I bought 48 meals, I think, that night because people were mad at us. After that, reservations only. But so that kind of fed the fire for doing something different. I've looked around, and I looked at the Fargo and Sycamore. I looked at the old Otto's building in DeKalb. You know, worked through that process, didn't work out. I've been looking at Maple Park, and then actually I got ended up down at the river at the barbecue place down there, and MCAP did work on the kayak run down there, and so I've always been appreciative of that. I looked at the barbecue place, thought this would be a really cool place for a restaurant. Kind of got the fever. That didn't work out, and then we became aware of this lot on the other side of the river. It's adjacent to a beautiful natural park, and we just thought it would fit. It could be a really beautiful spot to do a nice building, you know, restaurant with a small banquet component to it, and kind of blend in with nature, with the natural park. Overlook the river, overlook the woods, lots of windows, stone, you know, that's kind of our vision. But, you know, first step was find out if we could actually utilize that lot for, you know, this purpose. And we're excited about it. You know, I have an offer on the property. You know, it's under contract. My due diligence is up. I just got it extended to the 25th of October, which gives us past the 24th of October date. And we're really interested in doing something cool for Yorkville, for ourselves, for Yorkville, and, you know, create something different, something with a view, something that will attract people from out of town. Right now, Fisherman's Inn, we're in Kane County, but I'd say, this isn't an actual number, but I suspect we probably 70% of our guests are from out of the county. So we're pulling in a lot of people. We pull in Chicago people right now, and it's been a big hit. We believe we can use, we turn down a lot of weddings. We probably show that place anywhere from 6 to 10 times a weekend, and a lot of small weddings that are too small for the inn. So we're looking at trying to create a banquet room that's on a little lower scale, but maybe fits anywhere from, you know, 80 to 130 people roughly in a banquet room, and then utilize, you know, surrounding parks, the historic church over in the town square for the ceremonies. You know, at Fisherman's Inn, we have an outdoor ceremony site. We also have an indoor ceremony site on the property. But a nice aspect of this location is that there is that little church next door, and I know they do weddings there, and we may be able to, you know, work with them to get, you know, kind of attract people because of that historic value of the church. So that's in a nutshell. We don't, we have an architect, Greenberg Farrell, Arlington Heights. We have not been working with them that closely. We've been working with David Schultz right now to get the site plan. But as soon as we receive our zoning approval, then we'll jump into design. Ideally, I'd like to be building something next year in the spring, early summer. That would be my goal. And you know, hopefully, I'm sure it'd be a fairly long process, but by, you know, by the following spring, we'd be open for sure, maybe sooner. So that would be the ideal plan. So there is a current, you know, a house on the property now, so initially I'd like to try to get that, if we get zoning, I'd like to get that torn out immediately by, you know, winter, and then you know, start improving the property and then getting ready for construction in the spring. So that's what we're all about.
So the final component to all of this, and it's not really related to the rezoning and variance other than the developers let us know, you know, that we need it operationally for successful operation of the property, is the public-private partnership in the parking lot. So if you look at the map that's on the board, you know, kind of in the northwest part, so north is to the right, you know, we had thought that the developer would be able to put in a right-in, right-out there, and that would be acceptable and would be able to meet our parking standards, if for no other reason than, you know, the minimum parking standards. We sent that down to IDOT, who didn't give a formal no, but kind of said it's not a great idea. And so that moved us towards, well, we need access to the park. And then we got talking about use of the park, since there are 8 parking spots there already, and trying to kind of wind the access drive and maybe add some additional parking to complement both the use and an expected improvement to the park and more patrons. So that's what I've got outlined in the memo. It's a bit of a unique proposal because it is not in a TIF, so we can't throw TIF incentives at it. It will generate a fair amount of sales taxes just based on their internal estimates and kind of what they've let us know they expect. And so we had to go a different route. And so we thought that with their expertise at NCAP and our prior relationship with them on other city developments, that we might be able to use their expertise and their resources to actually improve the park, both for their benefit for weddings and maybe cocktail hour, but really for the public's benefit. If you've been down there, we did put about $60,000 into the park a few years ago, which resulted in the parking lot, the asphalt trail in the beginning part, and then the wood chip trail, which generally forms a circle throughout the property. There's a small shelter on the southeast portion of the property, which has a couple picnic tables under it, but the remainder of the property is relatively overgrown. So the south end of the park, specifically below the last trail, is kind of blocked by overgrowth for a good viewing vista. So regardless of whether this project happens, you know, my guess is that within the next 5 years we'd be looking to kind of, you know, redevelop the park so that somebody could go down there and utilize the existing park benches to kind of look out over the river and the dam and all the improvements that we're doing within Riverfront Park. So there are a couple very good viewing points there that are currently overgrown. So just in, you know, the meetings that we've had with Mark and his team in the past couple weeks, you know, he had expressed an interest in kind of throwing resources at the park and making it better. And in return, potentially us giving them a parking lot. So I've got the outline of it. It's on the second page of my memo here. And a lot of the details are still being worked through. But in general, it would allow them to cross the property, so access, and put a sign somewhere so people would know that this is the way to get into the property. The creation of parking spots, both for public use and for their use during peak periods, potentially, and whether that's form of a lease or a use agreement is something that we still have to work out with the attorneys. But then actually go into the park as an exchange for the commitment of building the parking lot with their funding, too, and improving the area around the building on our property. Clearing it of invasive species potentially, and then getting together for redevelopment of the shelter and gazebo area, both to improve it for weddings, but just for general use of the park also. And then looking at a long-term maintenance agreement potentially, which is what NCAP does anyway, is potentially a donation to the city to offset the cost of the improvements. So those things are all still being worked through. And then kind of our general you know, incentive in lieu of a TIF agreement was this property used to be on well and septic, and actually when we entered into the contract, we all thought thought it was on well and septic, but when the Route 47 project came through, put it on city and water and sewer. So there's a nice residential new water and sewer service line crossing our property in a mini pump station. So those would have to be accounted for and actually would have to be upsized in order to accommodate the building. So we can do most of that work in-house. We think it's like $35,000 total. It could be funded out of the water and sewer fund, and we saw that as a reasonable incentive just on the overall project for us to be able to do to entice them to come here in lieu of a TIF agreement. So that's the general outline. Like I said, the details of their contribution to our parking lot and the actual improvements in the park is something that's going to park board. You know, we need to discuss it here. We need to discuss the budgetary impacts. But it is something that he needs a relative understanding on as the rezoning and the variance moves forward so that he's comfortable with closing on the property and then proceeding forward with that, probably in the form of a development agreement is my guess. And so what I've got here on this handout, this is actually hot off the press. Brad had submitted that to me today. We're looking at two layouts for the parking lot, and we're trying to be sensitive to the tree cover on site. And in particular, there's a tree in the middle of the site. It's a 40-inch oak tree, which we're trying to save at all costs. And so one of the layouts would be to add as much on-street parking as possible, but then to kind of add parking as you wind in through the access drive in the property. So the drawback to this is that there are, you know, a couple trees that get lost. Some of them are dead. But that the parking lot and access drive ends up being a little bit further east on the property than maybe the park department, park board, which we'll review this next week, might like. But the benefits is that you're maybe saving more trees than you would with an alternative plan, which could just be, you know, building an extension to their proposed parking lot in a rectangle form and keeping it as far west on the property as possible. So then the footprint of the parking lot is a little bit less in that case, but you're probably losing more trees, and I don't know that the cost will necessarily change. That's something the engineers are still calculating. But this is kind of what we're thinking. We're thinking trying to be sensitive to the layout of the park, the tree cover, and then provide a different option, which might just be cheaper, and then kind of talk about that over the next month or so. So primarily what I'm looking for here is everybody's okay with the development of the park for an access road and a parking lot, and then all the other things with the improvements to the park, water and sewer, those can be worked out as part of the development agreement in a month. But if everybody says, no, this is not okay, we don't want anything touching the park, then we need to back off and think of something else.
Can I finger first?
Yeah, go ahead.
First off, I worked at Fisherman's Inn in 1995. I met my now wife's grandmother, who sold me my tuxedo and apron. First of all, the house itself, it was always an impossible house. Like, I went to a graduation party there in 1997, and I remember because I tried to go left. And it was like, this is never going to happen. So, yeah, you got to tear that thing down. I don't like the right-in, right-out. I told Bart that. That sucks.
On 47,
but,
you mean?
Yeah. But I understand. I don't normally go north. I'm usually going south. So I'll be selfish and say, yeah, not really my problem. But I like the idea of improving Clark. We were down there maybe a month or two ago, and the majority of everything south of that trail towards the river is mustard and poison ivy, or poison oak, one of the two. So whatever goes in there is there. So there's probably a lot of cool finds once you get back there. So let me know what you find. But the idea of exchanging access for a cleanup that we don't have to fund is very, very attractive to me. Because number one, I don't want my guys getting poison ivy. At first, I was concerned about using the Clark Park up towards Maine as a main point of access. But seeing all of the trees, which, you know, we've noticed a few that are on their way out, it makes more sense now. The thing that I want to kind of be careful with as we go forward with it is paying attention to where the headlights are hitting. I know there's neighbors directly to the east, but then when you cross that street, when you guys were building that parking lot, there was a lady who's like, there's 1,000 cars parked in front of the house. And there was two. But she saw these headlights, and I want to be, like, if we're going to put a B1, B2 next to a residential, I think we need to be dainty with it. And whether that's with berms or more shrubs or whatever you got to do, let's respect the neighbors.
I want to chime in on, I agree, and I think this, the east north corner, maybe they can burn something or, you know, shade that up so that sunshine, you know.
Absolutely.
Give them some privacy there.
In addition to that, I'm not saying you're going to go out of business, but when you do go out of business, since this is your expertise, it would be nice if you had a plan for either removal or what are we going to do with the park, with the parking lot that we erect that connects with your business? Because if your business shuts down, I'm not jinxing you, I promise. I want the park to go back to its former glory of just being either a green area or a wooded area. So I'm not asking for an SSA, but I'm saying permeable pavers and then put seeds in between them. Funkhauser will help. See? Look at this thing. Look at this thing. So if we can do something that allows it to transition back to nature, or at least have that in the workings, or something that we can talk about before it, before that happens, I just think we need to be proactive. Because I'm in a neighborhood right now with no roads, which are, it's a naturally permeable paver because there is no roadway. So I actually have trees growing in my street.
So just a quick note on permeable pavers. We've asked EEI to give us a cost estimate for that. Our early estimate was that it would be significantly more expensive than asphalt. There are going to be detention impacts on both our property and the private property that we would expect to mitigate, maybe not through permeable pavers, but with rain gardens and drainage swales, which is NCAP's expertise. So that was our initial thought, was that permeable pavers were probably too expensive, but we might be able to get around it.
Cool. And then the other thing that I keep thinking about, because like I used to work at Fisherman's Inn, and the walk from my parking lot to where I hung up my coat was a long one. The idea of, this happens with my wife all the time, she's in heels, and we're walking through the grass. Now, if this parking lot is wide enough that allows, you know, a small portion of the parking lot to be used just for pedestrian traffic, I'm thinking of 11 o'clock at night, it's raining, and there's somebody walking, and they're not going to be walking in the grass. So that's just something to keep in mind. Coming from the service industry, the last thing you want is a woman with a broken or a wet heel. So putting that out there just because I know my wife would be angry. But like I said, the right in, right out is really wonky, but I get it. Everything else, I just want to make sure that we're good to the neighbors and that there is a plan for the parking lot after it serves its purpose.
Yeah. On the neighbors, too, another quick note is the neighbor to the immediate east is the Gablers. We had been in discussion with them 3 or 4 years ago on some encroachment issues on the, I forget the name of the street here, Colton Street, that right-of-way where they've got their actual private driveway and a fair amount of hardscape that they've installed within the right-of-way. And so we tried to remediate that a few years ago. It didn't really go anywhere. So, you know, our idea was is that this provides us an opportunity to get their feedback on berming and additional landscaping and then maybe also clearing up the encroachment issue within the right-of-way. Cool. I understand that there might be some additional encroachment issues into Clark Park, but for me, that doesn't necessarily matter for this discussion. That's more for the park board to decide whether they want to do anything about that. But this, I think, provides us a natural opportunity to talk about in the next couple months.
Okay. And then this, the exit that's more to the east, mm-hmm. that would go right into somebody. Yeah, but that would go right into somebody's living room, right?
You know, just to comment on the, you know, the plan for the lot, you know, if that business were, you know, disappear someday, you know, I'd like to think that I think there's maybe improvements possibly down the road for the city square park or whatever. There's concerts and things like that over there. And right now there's maybe 40, I'm just guessing, I kind of counted them, but 40, between 40 and 50 spots over there. And that as, you know, the city grows and there's more activities, you know, closer to the downtown, that maybe that lot would actually be utilized. There is a crossing. There are signs with a lighted signs with a push button to cross 47 there. Yeah,
we will bring that up.
The race track. I've tried to cross there five times. But the fact that there, you know, may be people from another side, especially on a major holiday, 4th of July or something, if you have concerts over there, that maybe they, you could utilize that extra parking. Maybe it would become a benefit down the road.
So the east entrance there, or the east exit rather, you know, the light impact to the neighbors, you know, that would be something we would look at too, and maybe that means that the relative benefit of saving trees on the property, and this layout is outweighed by just making everything as condensed as possible in the western section and losing trees. So that'll be something that we'll talk about over the next month.
Alex, any comments?
I like the design, and I agree with a lot of what Joel said. Yeah, I mean, I'm for it.
Yeah, I like it too. Like I said, like with Joel said, you know, but we need to buffer some of these areas maybe a little bit that on the borderlines. And the other thing is, just take $35,000, make it just a regular incentive. You know, like we would do any other business. We've done it with the Dunkin' Donuts. It's better than otherwise. People are going to say, "Well, you're helping a business through the water fund," just like we were just talking about earlier with the rental program. So, just to make that just, I mean, we've done it before. It's not a big amount of money either. So, I forget what we did over for Dunkin' Donuts on the south side there.
It was a sales tax rebate.
Yeah.
Well, however, the center gets, I mean, we can figure out just accounting.
We want the sales.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, how the city does incentives in other projects is.
Right.
Chris?
On the topic of the incentive, I think, you know, if we're going to expend, you know, $35,000 on the water service, you know, to do that there, if we're doing some of that in-house, maybe this is an opportunity for a business district for this parcel so that, you know, they're taking 0.5%. On top of it, and we take, I don't know, maybe it's 10 years, we take 50% of that 0.5% towards recapture, and whatever they do over that actually goes to them
right. For
re-improvement, investment in their business. So maybe it's something where it's mutually beneficial for a 0.5% business tax. That way we can recapture some, and even if we don't recapture all of it in 10 years of our upfront costs, and that includes parking costs, because I'm not just going to sell water, but we have other costs. So maybe that's something to consider. The other, I know that in our purchase agreement for this property, there's a restriction in there for the ultimate use to be for recreation, education, and permanent open space. So is parking that's to be used for overflow peak uses for commercial, is that open space? You're kind of skirting that one. But I see an opportunity to not skirt it, but to correct the issue. Just doing a quick look at this site plan, south side of the property is open space. If we shift that open space from the north to the south, we take the property to the south right on the river and we give them just to the north, we could actually do a parking lot that fits all of this in together, one drive, actual driveway in on the west side. It actually would be something where we're saving a few trees, actually, if we do this. Might give us an opportunity to not have to deal with that eastern leg of the parking lot, because honestly, this is a very inefficient parking lot and drive. And I'm looking at our long-term cost, operations, maintenance. But if we were to do a little land swap, consolidate that parking lot, put in a business district, we might be able to make this something that's really good, beneficial to both of us, as compared to putting a parking lot for commercial use on what's supposed to be open space. That does trouble me, but I see us having some opportunity here.
So Kathy had reviewed the deed already and the ITEP grant language, which has some additional restrictions on it, that sunset, I think, like 7 years. And she didn't feel that the parking lot and access drive would be a violation of the deed nor the grant agreement. But that's something that we have to discuss on our end, you know, as the process moves forward. The land swap idea was something we had considered too, and her opinion was that that would be more of a challenge because what you would have to do would be first to go to the Clark family,
yeah,
and say, we want to give up a portion of this property, and we either want to give the money from the sale to them, or just get them to consent to let us doing it without compensation. So that process, we figured out, would be significantly more complex and longer, even though that may be a little bit cleaner, from an ease of operations perspective.
I think even though it may be a little longer, but that, I think, is the cleanest. And, you know, even reading the purchase agreements, I don't have the ICEP agreements in front of me and the grant, but, or the, that's the same one. I don't have the final deed either, but it would seem to me if we could transfer that land, that would make the most sense to make it most clean, to transfer the property. And if we enter a private-public partnership, we build the parking spaces on that one park. You know, we're building a third of the parking lot under the guise of maybe we can try to recapture some of that on sales tax. I'd be more comfortable with that than putting a parking lot in an open space on a piece of property that we're supposed to be maintaining for open space, unless we're truly doing this well. That's my concern. And that's, no one's going to come here and, you know, raise holy hell or anything that we're, you know, putting a parking lot on it, but the fact of the matter is we entered agreement that said we would keep it in open space. We would keep it for recreation. And I would just want to make sure that we're going to do this right, that we hold to the intent of what we purchased this property for. That's really where I'm coming. I think this would be great. I think if we could make this project happen with some, you know, incentives here, that it would be an absolutely great project. I think, well, I know NCAP, I know the company, and I know they would do a great job of helping us mitigate this property and make it actually something that's less hazardous to go through. But I think we would have a good opportunity. And I agree, permeable pavers on here, that would help us. you don't have to deal with, you know, your stormwater mitigation. You can paint it all within this, the subbase of the pavers.
Joe?
I disagree with Chris, but I think you're more likely to get the park used with that than a land swap. I mean, it'll be maintained better. People actually use it. I'd like to see maybe trails even farther back. I'm okay with it.
I think the reason
it looks like a park this way.
The reason the trails didn't go further down was because of steepness.
Yeah.
And it means a lot of terracing and stuff, and I think Park Board just didn't have the money at that point to do any more than they did, so that's why the trail stopped where they stopped, and not because there's a slope.
But I think this is an actual opportunity to use the park what it is supposed to be used for, is open space. I mean, it'll get maintained better now. Just don't be loud, because I'll hear about it.
So, I think I have enough feedback on the parking lot, the use of it, and there will be a lot more conversation on that over the next month or so. For me to feel comfortable with moving forward with the negotiation on that. Same for the incentive agreement. And we kind of glossed over the rezoning and variance issues, which actually are going to be in front of PZC on October 18th, and then in front of City Council for a vote on October 24th. So from a more normal land use petition perspective, I think that some feedback should be given there.
Yeah, well, like I said, 47, well, I actually didn't say this, I wanted to. 47 is loud, and if you live near 47 or near 34 or near a major arterial road, you should expect changes, because the world is not going to build away from you, the world's going to build in your backyard. I think if we're careful with, like, being respectful of the neighbors, being respectful with your building of what's already there, actually make better of it. don't be like the upholstery business. Like, be better than that.
It can't be worse.
But I think it's all in the approach. I think the intent is there. Otherwise, I mean, I couldn't imagine living there. I mean, that's probably one of the noisiest houses you could ever live in.
You get used to it.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, I've gotten used to the train horn.
Yeah.
I chose to move here because of the train.
You did.
So I think with the correct approach, the rezoning isn't an issue. We just have to be respectful of what's already there, respectful of what would come after, and then just like we always do, you know, you ask for the public's input and kind of see where this takes us. But I think it's a really, really cool idea, and I would love to see it happen.
I
agree with that.
Yep.
Okay with the rezoning.
Okay.
Next step on that then is PCC on October 18th for their zoning
and
their
residents.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. The public hearing. The publication went out today.
Yeah, the drawings, the cost estimates, the incentives, the sewer issues, all those other things. As we come to agreement and have discussions on those, I'll try to keep everybody updated. My guess is that we'll try to have something in front of you at the November EDC meeting that would be an agreement, but that depends on our timeline and the developer's timeline, too.
All business, any additional business? Have nothing?
No.
Meeting adjourned. 7:09.
Tacos.